Welcome back to the Garage Built Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Jason Hallman. This and all episodes of the Garage Built Podcast are recorded live in the Garage Built Studio, sponsored by 1620 USA Workwear and brought to you by Grease and Gears Television, now available on Roku, Apple Television, iOS, and Android devices. Hey, listen, are you still wearing the Walmart workwear, the Dickies? Listen, I'm not judging you. I get it. Have you ever thought of moving up and trying some custom-built workwear from a company like 1620 USA? I've been wearing 1620 USA for 3 years now. All of their garments are made in the good old United States of America, and they're guaranteed for life. You're not going to get that from any department store workwear. Couple bucks more, but we're going to save you those couple bucks. Go to 1620USA.com and use the code WORK24. It's going to save you 15% on your entire on 1620USA on Instagram. Try a pair of their new double knee utility pants. They've got fantastic Nyko. It's a fabric that is super, super, super thin and soft. Moves real easy with you. No break-in period on any of their workwear. It's fantastic stuff. We're also brought to you by Source Media, who launched their new Grease and Gears TV app on all Roku and iOS Android devices worldwide, which allows you to stream motorcycle content from your phone or on your television 24/7. Go to Grease, the letter N, GearsTV.com, and subscribe today. We've got a fantastic guest for you today in the queue, Mr. Buck Shaw, one of the promoter team from Tennessee Motorcycle and Music Revival. That is the annual event that happens at the Loretta Lynn Ranch in May. He's going to tell you all about it. Some fantastic new stuff that they're adding this year. And thanks for listening along.
You're listening to the Garage Built Podcast with your host, Jason Hallman.
What's up, homeboy?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing, brother?
I'm very well. Very well. Coming off a nice weekend. Spent some time with some family and did some cool stuff, just like kind of non-motorcycle related stuff. So every once in a while to do that is not a bad thing, you know?
Yeah, with us, the weather here, man, it's a trip. It gets really nice, and then it gets really cold, and then it gets really nice. So when you get a riding day, you almost have to get out and make it happen.
It's a moral imperative, isn't it?
It is. It's a trip. Well, now it's fun because Tanya's in that stage of her riding, you know, journey or whatever, that he's just like, I fucking love riding motorcycles. Let's go.
Oh, dude.
She's just, yeah.
That's
she's
great.
She's geeked up all the time. Yeah, no, it's awesome. Because sometimes I'm like, oh, man, like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then you get out and you're like, yeah, this was awesome.
Yeah, it takes a minute, though, doesn't it?
I had an experience. Like, we got invited to this. It was for work, for some healthcare, pretty crazy tech stuff with some smart people in Hawaii. So, like, we're in Maui at the Four Seasons, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, you know, I've been there before, but I'm kind of like, the place always kind of underwhelms me. I mean, it's cool, but I'm like, I think Mexico's pretty. Anyway, all my friends are like, oh, my God, you're in Maui at the Four Seasons. How cool. We come home and the next day, we go out, take a rip up into wine, not wine country like Napa, but wine country up in the foothills here. There's a developing wine scene. We're just ripping these, like, winding roads, and then we go to this cool place and eat, and just the scenery and the day and the ride, and, you know, it's just like, you know what? And someone's like, oh, Hawaii fills my soul, and I'm like, this so much more fills my soul than anything I did in the last week in Hawaii. Like, I think sometimes we take for granted the shit where we live.
I would agree with that. I you know, Karen and I have been, for everybody listening, we're talking to Buck Shaw, a very good friend of mine, been friend for a very long time. We met back in 07 in the Paramount Custom Cycle days. We met in Daytona. That was a fun week that we'll rehash here in a minute. But I'm talking with Buck Shaw, who is one of the three promoters of the Tennessee Motorcycle and Music Revival, which is in its beyond being a burgeoning event, it's a quantifiable, classifiable, like real rally.
Yeah, it's different. You know, it's a different vibe, but it's special.
Yeah. Getting back to talking about the things that we kind of take for granted around us, it's like, you know, I've lived in Florida now for 14 years, and I have to force myself sometimes to get onto the beach and remind myself why we came here in the first place, right? Because you have like an idea right. When you're going to move somewhere. I don't know if you've ever, I would assume we've never talked about this in all these years that we've been friends, but I'm assuming that you're from kind of the part of the country that you live in and you probably haven't really moved around a whole bunch. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, California my whole life.
Wow. That's got to be a bit of a – it's such an amazing place. I mean, I remember growing up in the Midwest being a BMX kid. I wanted to get my driver's license, get my diploma, put my BMX bike in the back of my car and just go to California. And by the time I did all that or could have done all that, the seasons had changed for me. But it's such an enigmatic place, and it holds such a important place in the – fabric of what being American is.
Yeah, and I think also like really true to our specific culture, right? I mean, everybody talks shit about Cali, and obviously the politics are stupid. But, you know, those people don't represent me. But when it comes to terms of culture, like hot rod culture, chopper culture, the Vikla kind of cholo bike thing, the gangsters, the lowriders, the music, the surf, the skate, the BMX, even drag racing.
Sure.
Flat track. All of it really was huge here early, you know, and kind of set the tone. And that culture is so beautiful when you see that mix, you know. It is truly unique to California. And then the geography is insane. Like, to ride the Sierras, then down to the beach, the coast, the 101, the desert, the high desert. It's got, you know, the Sierras. It's got everything. But it does have some horrible leadership that makes it hard to live here full time. It's just, it's getting, and to have a business here is challenging as fuck. It's just gotten, you know, you hope it swings back, but I don't know that it will. I don't know how that happens.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking about a place and you had mentioned the geography and the topography of that place. I don't know. You know, my first experience with California was, in 2007, I got invited to go to Jesse's No Love Party through the Chopper Dogs thing that was going on at the time. And, you know, I got in my truck and I put my bike and another friend's bike in the back of my truck. And I drove across the country by myself, taking the northern route, like across, I want to say it was 80. It takes you through like Kansas City and you go through Denver and you go through parts of Utah and Nevada. And I remember I left Tuesday morning, kind of just lackadaisical just to travel. And I got to Las Vegas at like 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And I was like, wait a minute, I heard before that LA is only a few hours from here. Right. So I just kept on keeping on. And, you know, that was I'm glad my first introduction to California wasn't on an airplane. And why I say that is when you come through that desert coming out of Vegas, and then you come down into Barstow and, you know, and you go through that, and then you go into over like a little mountain range, and I'm trying to play this from memory, but you find yourself in the space where now it's populous, right? And you have Big Bear there, and you know, you're moving down. It's just, gosh, it's so cathartic. I mean, it really stays with you, and it's an amazing place. And there's so much more positive things to talk about than the negative things. You know, the people, the music, the culture, the, like you said, I mean, name anything that we would consider, you know, quote unquote cool. And more oftentimes than not, Cali either started it or perfected it.
And it is interesting. You speak about the geography, like when you drive, even going like the Grapevine into LA, or if you come through the high desert down in, it is like there's this transformation, right? Because typically you're kind of high desert or mountainy or kind of low desert, and then you go up through this pass, and then all of a sudden you're in this massive city. And the cities are a mess. I mean, the density of San Francisco, the density of LA, it's pretty effed up. But you get outside of the city and you meet the people, and they're the same people you meet everywhere else. You know, like, sure, that's the one thing, you know, when you actually ride a motorcycle across multiple states and you meet real American people, working people, farmers, ranchers, truckers, whatever. It will renew your faith in the goodness of people, in my experience anyway.
Agreed.
And that's why I you don't get that if you're not on the bike, because you don't break down. You don't have to go find parts. You don't have to fix shit. You don't have to sleep at someone's yard in your tent. That experience, you know, is so unique and kind of rare for a lot of people these days. I mean, I think your motorcycling experience should be whatever you want it to be, but it's just that there's something about being on the road and doing a trip like that that is so fucking unique and so cool. But for me, it really renewed my faith in people.
Yeah. You mentioned like the, as you're talking about sleeping in someone's yard and fixing a bike and all those things that happen, you, by traveling across the country in means other than in a tube, you know, catapulted through the air, excuse me, at 300 miles an hour,
you are
making yourself vulnerable to a point to where you're allowing bad and hard things to happen. And I think that's where knowledge, peace, comfort, it removes the anxiety from a situation. Like, I don't know how to articulate that perfectly, Buck, but I think that, you know, steel sharpens steel, right? And when you run into these problems, like, nobody remembers the time we went and did something and nothing happened. Like, if you think about the week that you and I met, the things that stand out were maybe things that at the time, we didn't appreciate them for what they were, but man, do they make great stories. You know what I mean? Those are the things we remember. Right. You remember Little John, and we remember, you know, I can't even remember his name, but the jeweler from, he had the little silver jewelry deal he was doing. He was friends with Mark and Aaron. And those are the things that I remember. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree. I think that there's something about that too, and it's changed a little bit. Like, now I do like riding a modern performance motorcycle because I know it's going to get me there, and that makes, you know, I have to be careful how I tell that story because a lot of people are like, oh, you don't know your roots or whatever. I was having this argument with a hardcore Florida club guy, and I'm like even a jockey shift, bro, like that's, like, you would never race that in a modern environment. That was a technology from 30 years, 40, 50 years ago. Super cool, right? But for me, not, I don't want to take my hand off the bar and shit, but I think it's super dope, right? And I get that people love fixing those bikes and working on those bikes.
Sure.
I have gotten to the stage in my life where, like, I really like riding a dependable motorcycle that goes fast, turns well, and stops well.
And
that might make me soft. That might make me softer than two bar colleagues.
No, but, because you can always pull the chopper out of the garage and blow the dust off of it. You know what I mean? And so that's
well, it's
that's
funny, the other dude. Thing. I was just talking. I was talking to Danger Dan, and I'm like, this is the year I buy a pan. You know,
sure.
I think that you have to have friends who do ADV riding, or, you know, who get off road a little bit to do that. And I don't know who that would be in my world, but man, I was looking at some of those BDR trails. You know, it's back road discovery route where you can go like several states, you can go border to border, and that just looks so fun. So I'm like, yeah, I think I gotta buy a Pan America. If anybody's got a deal on a Pan, hit me.
I literally, when you said you were talking to Danger Dan and you were gonna buy a Pan, I thought, oh Christ, he's gonna get a Pan head and go ride. He's gonna go ride across the country, his parts fall off, with Danger Dan.
Exactly. No, I'm gonna get a Pan. That's what I mean. I'm getting old now. I'm soft. I want a Pan America. I hit the button, the thing will take me anywhere I go. You know, I can ride it in the dirt, ride it in the street. Like, that's what I'm looking for.
You said something that I really want to come back to and really unpack it, that everybody, and I've said this for years, and I'll quantify it real quick. Like, people ask me, like, hey, do you want to ride to Sturgis? Hey, do you want to ride to the Keys? Hey, do you want to, you know, you want to meet up for a ride during the week? And I'm like, listen, I would argue with anybody that I love motorcycles as much as anybody does, but my motorcycle experience is very different than almost everybody who rides one. And here's my quantifiable data. I grew up in a house where there was a motorcycle in my basement in pieces and together in my living room. I grew up in a household where, I knew not to touch somebody else's stuff. Everything was motorcycles. And then when I turned 30, my dad and I opened our motorcycle shop together, and now I'm 51 and I'm still in the motorcycle business, and it's 40 week, 40 hours some week, 50 hours some week, 80 hours some week if I'm getting close to an event, where my motorcycle experience is very unique to me, but I get enough motorcycle ish. You know what I mean? I work. Yeah. I enjoy the contraptionness of it, the mechanical nature of it, the fixing the problem so that other people can ride. And it's not that I don't enjoy riding, is that I only have so many hours in a day, and I have a beautiful wife and beautiful grandchildren and a beautiful home that all need my attention too. So I can't just be motorcycles only, but I get my fair share.
Well, and it's cool, man. I've seen like those pictures of your pops, and you just, it has that patina, you know, where you grew up in that life. And that's Aaron Green and I, with Aaron Green, for those who don't know, he's an OG, probably one of the best fabricators in the world, builds amazing motorcycles, now is in the agriculture business. But we were talking about how, like, in the old day, and you kind of hit on it earlier or a minute ago, you had to know how to act before someone would impair that knowledge to you.
Yeah,
you had to at least know how to go be in their presence and not be a fuck up, you know, and to actually add some value. That might mean sweeping the garage or going to grabbing a tool, right? But
right.
You knew how to behave, and you had to behave properly before you could get the knowledge to do what you needed to do. So there was not just this thing of learning how to build a bike. There was this thing of learning the culture and how to act and how to comport yourself as a man.
Yeah.
And now, you know, YouTube's wonderful, right? I use it all the time,
yeah.
Or Google, but you know, that knowledge is just ubiquitous. It's everywhere. So, and that's why I think we have, you know, and it's funny, again, you get old, you start to talk shit about the younger generation. But like, I go to the gym and I'm like, these kids just are fucking rude. They have no etiquette. They just like, but no one taught them. They don't know better, I guess. You know, I'm not making excuses for them, but there's just no, that path to learn something now is instant, and it used to require investment and time and effort and commitment.
I blame it on I blame it on cheat codes in video games, because you know what I mean. Like, I never wanted to get into video games because there was cheat codes. I'm like, I'm not going to play against right. somebody who has cheat codes. It's like, it's not even it. It everything is to me like success is like time times effort equals success, right? And it's you know. It has to be hard, or you have to be able to be willing to do something not good enough already so that you can learn to be good.
Well, and I think that, you know, hard work and hustle is obviously the secret sauce, right? Mm-hmm. We've all seen it. And, you know, you just said something. It's pretty amazing, bro. There aren't many people who've been in the business and actually are in the motorcycle business, not selling T-shirts, not trying to be on TV. That's all great. But like actually running a shop, and making a living doing service, maybe selling a few parts, building a bike or three or four or five a year, whatever your gig is. That's a hard deal, man. It's tough to make that work. So when I look at a guy like you or a guy like John Jessup or, you know, whoever it may be, they're in these privateer shops and really have it going on. I have so much respect for that, bro. And I, you know, you know, 30 years, right?
Well, I appreciate that. Like, because we don't, you know, as entrepreneurs, we don't hear that. And, you know, that's a good segue into, if we come back to when we were talking about things that started in California. Motorcycle rallies started in California in Hollister in what, 47, 46, something around there. And now there's, you know, we see these cyclically, these rallies come and go, some come and go. Some are here to yeah. stay. You and Tanya and Carrie have all put in, you've put your head on the chopping block. You really did, and a lot of people don't know that. And I know early on when we talked, it was kind of, didn't want to draw attention to that. But you guys inherited an area, not an event. And it was conflated that it was your event. And you had to work through some struggles to get to where you're at. But now you're... I mean, you're 7 years in. If I'm doing the math right, it was 17 or 18, right, that you started this?
Yeah, 17, you're right.
So
plus
now,
the COVID year.
Yeah, so plus the COVID year. But we, you know, you guys have worked really, really hard, and you have developed a rally that people are part of that rally. That rally has a community in it. There's different, you know, I think you and I were talking last year riding around on a golf cart that, you know, there's different communities even inside TMMR now. And there's
right.
there's no fear of judgment either. Like there's lots of different cohabitative activities going on, whether you're there for the hill climb or you're there to do the flat track stuff. That's loosey goosey, but it's still, you know, people are out on a track, they just naturally become competitive. And then you have people that are there to literally to unwind and spend quality time with other human beings that maybe they don't live by, or they don't get enough time to spend with them when they are at home. It's such an important thing. And that started in California. Rally started in California, and here you're from California, and you have this wonderful rally outside of Nashville. How did you come about deciding that this was the place, the time, and how did you cultivate that community?
Yeah. So, to be fair, the idea originally was Carrie's. You know, and she just Carrie Rep, and she'd done a lot of different stuff and worked for a lot of other people. Hard Rock, did the Hard Rock tour for the Seminole Tribe, worked with Harley Davidson. A bunch, but you know, she's like, look, there's great music there. There's not a rally there. There's great roads there. And the people are cool. We really started it about 12 years ago. And then, you know, you kind of alluded to it. We almost had a deal with the ranch. We liked the venue. We ended up not making a deal. Then a couple years later, a con man, kind of pitched the same thing to them, and they leased the property to him. He sold a bunch of tickets, and then he burned a bunch of people. And, It was pretty sad. I mean, obviously motorcycle people, if you kick out $200-$400, $500 to go to a thing for a week, some people, that's the only shot they get all year. So this guy burned a lot of people. And then we kind of got reconnected because they needed a little help with PR, and unfortunately people were really blaming Loretta and the ranch, and all they really had done is lease the property to an asshole. And they maybe could have done more diligence, or, you know, I just don't, you know, it's like you rent a house to someone and they set up a drug lab. It's not really the person's fault who rented the house.
Yeah.
But at any rate, we then kind of looked at it, and I'm like, you know, there's a lot of interest. The opportunity's still here. It's a gutsy thing to do, but let's see if we can turn this around. And I think we underestimated just how much damage this guy had done. Like, he had pissed a lot of people off, and he had burned a lot of people. And it took the first couple of years, like literally I would be in a bar, dude, like doing promo work and talking to people, and someone would roll up and be like, hey, dude, you fucking ripped me off. And I'm like, no, take out your phone, Google me. Like, that's not who I am. That's not who my partners are. But one by one, bro, we turned it, like, and we literally, it was like politicians kissing babies. You know, we went from person to person, whether it was through social media or in person. And, you know, and we tried to proffer to anyone who did get burned the best way we could to get unburned. And, you know, at one point we were going to say, like, let's comp anyone who got burned. And then we talked to the FBI, and it turns out it might have been a lot of people. So we're like, well, you know, you got to be careful there. But we did everything we could. And then the biggest thing we did was try to do something uniquely cool and uniquely authentic that was what we all dig. And it did work, to your point. It slowly, even year one, like, which was terrifying, right? We had invested a lot of time and a lot of money. And I think we had about 500 people there, and about 200 of them were working for us. So, or vendors,
sure,
or some form of unpaid guest. And my wife looked at me and she said, you know, I think we just threw the most expensive party of our lives.
But it's memorable, right? It's memorable in it. You planted a flag.
Well, and the thing is, she wasn't really a motorcycle person then. She'd ride on the back, but
it
wasn't her thing. And she, just that first weekend, she met so many people, so many different backgrounds and stories and people who, how they got there and the journeys they took. And she's like, you know what? This is dope. We need to keep this going. And so year by year, you know, we added a little and we got better, and our biggest thing, though, from day one, like, we're not going to do the typical stuff. And there's a risk in that, right? When you do original music, upcoming artists instead of cover bands, when you have a fee to come to an event, when you have multiple things going on, flat track, hill climb, bike shows, number one, the production can become really cumbersome and expensive. But number two, you can overextend yourself. You can throw too much at people. You can be too into what you love instead of kind of what the masses love. It's a fine line. Like, you know this, right?
Yeah.
When you build a bike to sell, you know, it's Jason's, but it's got to also appeal to that customer, that client, that person who might buy it. There's that fine line. But from day one, we're like, we're going to be authentic. We're going to do real music. And the coolest thing is, Jason, from day one, it has attracted the crowd. The people is really what makes the TMMR.
It really
the
is.
The music's awesome. The racing's awesome. The shows are awesome. We got all that. But the people it attracts from day one, I don't think we've had really a violent or negative event in 7 or 8 years. You know, we've had one or two things on the fringes. A guy came in who was pissed off because his girlfriend was there with someone else. And, you know, we had one guy who got a little drunk. But really, we've had none of the typical stuff you would have when you get, you know, 3, 4, 5,000 people together for a couple of days and drink a lot, party a lot. And it's unique too, you know, like I grew up in a family. There was a lot of alcohol and a lot of, substance, mostly alcohol really. But, you know, the idea of having kids in a motorcycle rally was the most repugnant thing I had ever thought of. Like, right. I hate seeing a baby carriage in Sturgis. Like, I'm like, get a babysitter.
Yeah, I agree.
I was wrong in terms of our event. There is a pack of kids who have grown up out there. They're like a feral little wolf pup pack. And dude, they're not around at night. Like, their parents manage them. They know that if you're in this life, you can race hell during the day and ride your bike, whatever. But after dark, we're going to the bar. You go to the tent or do whatever you do. And it works. Like,
And those children are all respectful too.
Oh, dude, unbelievable. Those kids are amazing. And it's not just that wolf pack that I know. Like, the kids who go there, their parents know how. It's kind of what I was talking about earlier. They know how to act. They know how to behave as men and women and human beings and parents. But, you know, I had this epiphany out there. I was watching Rhett, and Rhett was like talking to these kids about, you know, this old flathead motor. And I just realized that, like, if we don't involve our kids, at least on the edges of this culture, or teach them this culture, it'll die in a generation. Like, it'll be gone.
It'll die, and or it'll become the Lord of the Flies, where there's no one direction, no one, you know what I mean? There will be nothing left over from what we would want to impart on them. We really do have to work at that. And you're right. That's what a community is. That's what community leaders are, you know?
So I was glad I was wrong. I mean, that idea when I at first, like, oh, we're going to be family friendly. I'm like, fuck that. We're not doing it. But I was wrong, and it has worked really, really well. And I love that. I love seeing those kids, and I love that people can come out, and I love that women riders come and feel safe. And, like, it's just the vibe is, and not that people don't feel safe in other rallies. I'm not.
No, I know exactly. No, it's that you on this insulated commune that we all agree to be a part of for 1 week, and we know that everybody's looking out for each other and everybody's trying to have fun with and for each other. And, you know, for those of that have not been there, you know, I've been there several times. It's one of my most favorite events I've ever been to, and here's why. There's no schedule that you have to follow as an attendee to get what you need out of it, right? Like, everybody kind of converges down at the river at the same time, but there's no bell that goes off, and the river isn't closed at the end of that session, and the river didn't open for that session. There's people who park their short little folding chairs. They park their ass down there, and when the first day they get there, and after breakfast, they sit there all day with their toes in the water and listen to music, and you know what I'm saying? It's like you can be you there with no, there's nothing to be ashamed of. And, you know, if you like country music, great. If you like rock music, great. If you can just walk around the property, and you're going to get a bunch of different smiles and different things you can do. It's not a one shot deal. Plus there's amazing riding when you leave the property.
Yeah. I like that. You know, it's interesting, right? You sweat about the music, and then you find out some people don't, you know, some people are there just for the music. Then other people, like, I've never even been to an evening show on for one of the big bands. They like hanging out by the campfire down by the creek and the bonfire late at night. And there's definitely something for everybody. You know, there is a point where you're like, oh, well, if we stack too much, do people miss stuff? Then they have to choose. We try to run a smart schedule, but there are times where, you're like, oh, do I want to go, you know, hang out by the creek, or do I want to go over to that motorcycle show? There is something for everybody. And I'm stoked, like, Holt's show. So we got the V-Twin Visionary show. Jeff Holt, I think, had 96 bikes in that show last year. And then, obviously, Bill Dodge's BC Moto. I mean, for a low-key show, some of the best bikes anywhere hold up with Born Free or Mama Tried or any of these, you know, classics, these iconic shows. For me, chopper shows anyway. Phenomenal bikes and phenomenal guys. Like, the cool thing about Bill, there's nobody down there who's not a cool cat. Like, if you're not a good guy, you're not going to make it in that group of dudes. They just kind of,
no, we have a way of vetting that out. And it's not even a mean way. We're just like, yeah, you know, we're just, no, it's not going to, you're just kind of not, you know, you're not even told that you're, but I've never really seen anybody get removed from that group. I mean, I've been in that group of builders for, you know, for a good part of my career. And, you know, I've been in the BC Moto two times myself. And it's, let's talk about, what I wanted to do was kind of like start at one point and kind of drill down on what the genesis of each one of those things were. And let's just start with the BC Moto. You're looking at, so we're talking about, for those that don't know, the BC Moto is the Bling Cycles. It's an invitation only to be a participant in that. And Bill handpicks quite a few builders. And those bikes are put on display statically for the whole event. And there's no trophies, but there's all this activity that goes on around it, because the builders, we've created this humble little group of builders that appreciate each other's time and talent.
Well, and what I love about, you know, from day one, just like our vision, Bill's vision was, hey, we're going to do something different, right? There's no winner. And I'm like, what? Come on, there's got to be a people's choice, something. He's like, no. That's what creates all the weirdness and the politics and the, you know, everybody, it's more a celebration of each other.
Yep.
But the quality of the bikes is just insane.
Yeah. Look at some of the builders that have been in there. Dan Heeman, Brock Bridges, Johnny 99, Johnny Humphreys. You have Jeremy Valentine from Joker Cycle Works. You have these builders, Dozer and if you, I mean, and these are all builders too that rely on each other to kind of for inspiration at the same time and accolade. Hawk Lachey was there one year. My gosh,
I love,
you know,
that guy.
Yeah, there's just amazing, amazing talent, and it's a limited number deal. And you know, I think comparatively, all of those bikes can hold their own, and some of them already have at events that, you know, are a little more internationally renowned, like Born Free, but at the same time, the venue just makes things amazing. You know, there's the BC Moto at your event. There's the what used to happen there at the the Buffalo Chip. They had the motorcycles as art kind of display, the Michael Lichter deal for years. They did that, you know, once AMD shut down. It's on that level with those things.
Yeah, it's pretty, I always tell people, like, if you were a Martian, right, and you never even knew what a custom motorcycle was, and you walked through there, your mind would be blown. Or some people come, like, from my community, there aren't bike people, they're music people, or music people from Nashville, and they're blown away by two things, the artistry, and then they're also blown away by how friendly people are. And I'm like, yeah, it's not Sons of Anarchy. Like, I know you're expecting a bunch of guys out here fighting and stuff, but they're blown away by how friendly people are and how much people take care of each other in that community, which is beautiful. That's a part of the bike, being a biker, that I love, right? That you never roll by someone broken down on the road. You know, if you got a truck, you pull over and you help people, and, you know, you share parts, and that's what I love, the beauty of that. But yeah, and so we got a bunch of shows, really. You got Jeff Holt's V-Twin Visionary show, which is all performance. Right. You've got the BC Moto, and then we've got a ride-in show that's fun that is put on by Bikers Who Care, a local charitable group out of Clarksville. Great guys. We've done vintage stuff. We love vintage. It's hard to do vintage shows because it turns out that getting 100-year-old motorcycles around isn't as easy as the ones we ride.
Right.
But plenty of different shows to see. The music's insane. Like, and our vibe for the music, you know this, Jason, but it's really emerging talent that's kind of either on the verge or has kind of hit. We're not going to be in the Kid Rock business, you know. That's a hard thing to do, and what we like is finding, like this year, you know, Whitey Morgan, L.B. Shane, Creed Fisher, Them Dirty Roses, the War Hippies. Send a prayer out for Colt Ford. Colt Ford was playing Thursday night. He had a pretty serious heart attack, and he's recovering.
Oh,
so
wow.
I don't think I'm allowed to speak about who's going to fill that spot, but I'm excited. Thursday night's going to be awesome. And then there's this gal, Grace Bowers, who is a 17-year-old, just turned 17, guitar prodigy, bro. Like Stevie Ray. I mean, wow. Unbelievable. Yeah, Grace, you don't want to miss that. And then some really cool stuff down at the creek, right? Lulu and the Black Sheep and the Whiskey Dicks and just a bunch of different really cool. But here's the thing, too, about CMMR. You're like L.B. Shane, he's got that big hit about, you know, the kid, he's not my son, but he's my boy. It was like a billion platinum hit, you know, mm-hmm. about being a stepdad. And that's what he was kind of known for. But the guy knocked, I mean, the show was unbelievable after I saw the guy. I'm like, he stole the show, right? So you might come and not know the whole bill, but when you leave, you're going to be like, oh, man, I'm a War Hippies fan now.
Oh, yeah. When we came in 19, as soon as we got in the truck, it was, and we had cell service, we downloaded every Cadillac 3 thing we could find, every Stone Senate thing we could find. You know what I mean? It was one of those kinds of things. It's amazing. Yeah. You're going to, and listen, I don't know if you know Whitey already, but he and I go way, way back.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I knew Whitey Morgan. So I'll tell you a funny story real quick, because you'll have some FaceTime with him. So I knew Whitey when his name was Eric, and he painted race cars for a guy named Ronnie. Oh, got to think of the last name, but Ronnie is in prison for a very long time for running a multi-billion dollar Ponzi scheme. And if you remember back, there was in Detroit about 15 years ago, they had a General Lee that they jumped in downtown Detroit in front of Cobo Hall right before Autorama. And Eric, a.k.a. Whitey Morgan, was one of the painters of that. And it was a neat deal because he lived in Flint and played at the machine shop. And he started being the lead singer for a buddy of mine's band. And then they changed the name of the band to Whitey Morgan and the 78s. And somewhere out there, there are some recordings. I cannot find it. I have it in an old hard drive of him playing a Van Halen song. And man, I knew then that dude was going to hit it. And the last time he and I hung out was we sat in a, this is the, like my cool story, like the guy who knew Elvis before he broke. We're sitting in, we go to watch Whitey Morgan and the 78s play at this little shitty bar on Pontiac Trail, way out in like Salem Township, Michigan, or Milford, something like that. And before the show, it was me, Whitey, Dylan Dunbar, and the drummer sitting in a Suburban passing around a bottle of Jack Daniels drinking before the show. It was just kind of cool, you know what I mean, to see him come this far.
Well, and it's funny because I really have wanted, you know, and it's, people don't really get it, but it's like a chess game, and Carrie does a lot of that. She's really good at it. But like, you know, just because you want someone and they're in your budget doesn't mean they're available, doesn't mean you get them. You know, there's a whole process of dealing with managers and, you know, talent companies and all that. But I've wanted Whitey for a couple years. I mean, I love Whitey and I love Creed Fisher. So yeah, I'm stoked about this year's, and then LV, to see LV come back. LV was just knocked. I was blown away by LV Shane last year. What a cool dude too. You know, he's one of those guys who just worked his ass off as a musician, like all of them. And then, you know, one of them hit and it hit big, you know, and it changed his life. And, but you listen to the rest of the book, it's good. It's all good. You know, and like, yeah, Cadillac 3, Thousand Horses, Whiskey Myers, like that's our vibe. That's what, you know, I always tell people too, if you listen to the Yellowstone soundtrack,
yeah,
those are most of our bands. So they all, and like, it's cool. We've had bands. The other thing that's getting really cool is our venue and event is kind of becoming a platform for these guys to find other opportunities. Red Clay Strays played with us, I think twice, and then went out and opened for the Stones. And I mean, really have gotten some amazing accolades out there and really stepped up in the world. War hippies are out with Travis Tritt. You know, it's cool to see. It's funny, you mentioned earlier Brock Bridges.
Yeah.
So people don't really know this story, but Bill and I together kind of discovered Brock. We were at Daytona and we were at the Spoke. And I look over and I see these two or three bikes, and I'm like, those were all built by the same guy, and they were rad. They were bitching bikes and had a unique style. This kid rolls up, and it's Brock's buddy, and we meet Brock and shop. And they're like, oh, we got a broken part. I'm like, do yourself a favor, go over to Bill's, tell him that you met me, you know, see if he can help you out. They did that. They become friends, and then from there, like, Brock to me now is one of the most talented builders out there anywhere.
Yeah,
like that guy's shit is rad, and it works, and he rides it, and they're, you know. So it's kind of cool. I like that same thing with musicians too. Like if we can get some garage builder and platform him to where he can get more awareness and have access to the rest of these guys, and then leverage that, and then that guy's doing other cool things down the road. Same thing with the musicians. You know, it's bitching to see these guys who hustle and work their asses off, kind of trampoline to that next level.
Yeah, when we came in 19, the bike that I had in the BC Moto belonged to a buddy of mine that lives in England. Well, he's gone to see Cadillac 3 every time they've come to England since 19. He drives from the northeast of England all the way down to London to see them. He's seen them in Manchester, Birmingham, and London, I believe.
Yeah, dude, I love that band. Those guys bring it. Those guys rock. And then there's a couple other things I really want people to be aware of. One is, between the motor company, Harley Davidson Motor Company, who is a sponsor, a major sponsor, they're our premier sponsor,
right?
And us, we are offering 500 passes for the weekend to any retired or active duty vet. And there are some left. They're burning pretty quick. So I want at least 500 vets there to be our guests. All they do is go onto our website at, you know, motorcyclesandmusic.com. And when they go through the regular process of buying a ticket, they put in HD Hero for the promo code. It'll walk you through, you know, it's one of these ticket platforms, so you got to do a few things, but it's free. So any active duty or retired vet can be our guest for the, you know, the whole event, Thursday through Sunday. And the cool thing is Saturday, we're going to do a ranch to ranch ride, hosted by the War Hippies, and then Harley is sponsoring a pig roast where the crew from Lead Sled are going to cook a pig, and they actually know how to do this. They're pretty good at it. And we're going to have a feast down at the creek party. So, oh, my lovely wife brought me a cup of coffee. Thanks, babe.
You're welcome. Jason.
Hello. How are you, dear?
I'm good. How are you?
Wonderful.
She's so disciplined, dude. She gets up early, goes to the gym, does all her stuff. I have to do it at the end of the day if I'm lucky.
Right.
But it's going to be a dope deal. And look, you know, Harley, it amazes me how much shit people give the motor company, whether it's the new bikes they're building or whatever. But I'm like, these guys are stepping up and helping pay for 500 passes. 500. That's a significant commitment to these people who keep us free, you know. And I want to celebrate those men and women. We want to celebrate them. But most of all, I want to get the word out, because I want every person who wants to come. And, you know, it's worth riding 8 hours. It's worth jumping on your bike or getting in your van to come to the TMMR. And I want those guys to be there and be celebrated. And I want that ride on Saturday, that creek party, to be bananas, to show Harley Davidson that we really appreciate.
Yeah, and that people come out when we put good energy out and make a true invitation to come one, come all, you know?
Yeah. But we do want to get the word out. So anybody, please let them know. It's simple. HD Hero is the promo code. Everybody's invited. And you will have to show, you know, obviously you got to show your military ID.
Yep.
But other than that, you know, it's a pretty simple process. Harley has been such a great sponsor and such a great partner. And so have the dealerships, dude. Like, a lot of people don't realize, typically these dealerships, they're very competitive. And they sometimes, not that they're bad to each other, but they don't always play really well together.
Yeah.
Yes, they're very solitary, and it's about, you know, and it's a tough business, especially these days, right? With interest rates the way they are. Listen, if you're in a position to go buy a Harley Davidson, go buy one, because it's an American institution and we need to help these guys and they need to help us. But at any rate, Appleton Harley-Davidson out of Clarksville, it's their area. So for any other dealership even to be able to come and be represented there, kind of needs their permission, which they gave from year one. And then now we have Boswell's Harley-Davidson, which is out of Nashville, is the Hill Climb sponsor. Bumpus Harley-Davidson out of, is that Murphy? No. Where's Bumpus? Memphis?
Memphis, Jackson, and Murfreesboro.
Yeah, Memphis, Jackson, and Murfreesboro. They're sponsoring the flat track. And then Appleton sponsors the burnout and, you know, the overall event. So it's super dope to see. And then, like, you know, other Harley-Davidson dealerships come down and party. So it's pretty cool to see those guys, you know, put down the sales competition for a day and or two or three and just come and hang out.
Yeah, and join each other in what we're all supposed to be doing anyways. You know, that's what the whole thing is. I think the word fellowship gets thrown around a little bit too, and it's a little too granola-y, if you will. But, I mean, it really is what it is. You go away from that event and with new friends and a newfound appreciation for chilling out, if that makes any sense.
Well, and I think that, you know, the other thing I want to get out there, too, we made a tough decision this year. We're going to a no hard color policy, so no cuts. And I know that probably ruffles some feathers. I'm a freedom guy, but you know the vibe there needs to continue to be one of neutrality. And there's never been any problem from the local clubs. The local clubs have been great, and they're great to work with. It's not really about that. It's about the community, the ranch, local law enforcement. One of the deals they kind of have made with us is they let me run my own security, and they stay out of the perimeter of the event as long as we manage that properly, right?
Right.
And so, you know, one of the conditions for that to continue was, and we had some bad stuff happen at a show in Ventura, you know, just a month ago. Sometimes when you get a couple football teams on a football field, they play football, and we want to, you know, we want to be respectful of that culture 100%. We get it. We know the history. We have a lot of friends in that world, but we are going to keep no hard cuts this year. And I don't want anyone to show up wearing a cut and be turned away. We will, you know, people do, we will find a way to secure their cut for them. Same thing if someone rolls in with a firearm. Like the ranch has a no firearm policy on the ranch, but we certainly understand when someone rides, you know, I'm strapped when I ride. And so if someone comes in and they're not comfortable, I don't like leaving a weapon in a saddlebag. I think that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
My head of security will lock them down in a safe, tag them, keep, you know, we try to be the most accommodating, service-oriented rally you'll ever go to. If you have a request, I'm going to try to satisfy it. And so's Carrie and so's Don. Doesn't mean we always can, but that's what we want to do. We want to try to make this experience so special and so unique, no matter who you are, that we accommodate those things. But I do want to get that word out because I know how that is. I've seen guys get turned away. It's not fun. You know, it is what it is.
I'm glad you brought up that, you know, that you're how accommodating you guys make sure you try to be. And the one thing I want people to understand too, that you're accessible. You can always find you, Carrie, Tanya, any number of your staffers. And they're not even, here's the cool part. They're not even like, they're not wearing a staff jacket. They're not wearing a shirt that says staff. They just are an integral part of what we are all doing there in the weekend, to where there's no question to it. Like everybody just kind of does, everybody that works for you, and I've had the pleasure of doing so, everybody fills whatever position needs to be filled at the moment to make sure that the people who are coming there to have a good time continue to do so in a safe and happy manner. I don't know how any other way to articulate that, but it's that kind of event. If you need to talk to somebody, you can find Buck Shaw, you can find Tanya Shaw, you can find Carrie Rep, you can find somebody to address whatever needs you have.
100%. 100%. And I really believe that it's important. Like, I'll sweep the trash, dude. I'll pick up trash. The bar was busy one year. I hopped back there, started pouring drinks. I mean, I just think if you ask your employees to do something, you should be willing to do it yourself. And really, you know, without being corny, it came from Loretta. And I am so blessed word blast. But I used to get to spend some time with Loretta before COVID and before she had some real health issues. And one of the things that she was all about, dude, is when you have people to your house, when you throw a party, you take good care of people, that there's a Southern hospitality that you hold up and you work your ass off to do that. And that carries over to the ranch. The ranch staff there, just they're amazing. They're amazing.
Talk about and, that and a little bit, Buck. Drill down a little bit on that. So for people who don't know, this isn't a piece of property that Loretta bought and put her name on. This was her home. This is where her family lived and still lives. And you know, a few years ago, we lost one of the members of the family through an unfortunate incident with a flood. And I mean, these people, this is their home. This is not just a piece of property that lies idle, except for the motorbike race that comes there in TMMR. This is a living, breathing, working ranch with family.
Yeah, no, it's clear how, like, the vibe of those people, how hard they work, who they are. Loretta bought that property in 1965. Her and Dew, her husband, rolled in. She saw it. I think they made an offer on it the next day. Her career was blowing up, which people don't realize, like, what a badass she was, right? She was writing songs. She was banned from country radio.
I was just
going
to say, she was the first person to write a song that was banned from country radio.
And she was writing songs about the experiences of working people and of women. And yeah. And it was radical for that time. Like, Loretta was a badass. Even in her, you know, older years when I would meet with her, she was just self-deprecating and fun and funny and clever and witty and sharp and just amazing. I was so blessed to spend time with her. And she told me about, like, the first, when they first had motocross out there. And she said, she goes, dude, what's that buzzing sound? And she's like, Loretta, that's the motocross bike. They've been having the AMA National Motocross Championships there for 43 years, I believe.
And launched the careers of countless professional
everybody
motorbike riders.
Not everybody.
Yeah.
And unless you came through Europe, you rode that dirt. Your yep. DNA and your blood and sweat is out there. And if you go out there during motocross, dude, it's you talk about Lord of the Flies, like it's mayhem, right? You've got everything for these, like, whiskey tango people going down the road in a beat up 25-year-old van, wrenching. And then you've got a guy in a $2 million Prevo, and everything in between. And there's just these radical little kids ripping around. And man, I don't know how Anthony manages it and how the ranch pulls it off. It's, but they do. And MX Motorsports, who puts it on, is just an amazing organization. But anyway, the vibe out there and the feeling started with Loretta, and it carries on with the staff, Kayla Lynn, and Anthony Bruto, the whole family. They're amazing. And when you meet them, you'll feel it. It's not bullshit. Like,
no.
It's as authentic as it gets. It is from the heart. And I think people feel that. And I think it brings out the best in other people. And yeah, that's, it's just a super cool thing. We did lose, Wayne Spears in the flood, 3 years ago. And man, I loved Wayne. And if you met Wayne, you'd love him too. And Wayne would love you back. And he was a cowboy who could fix anything. He could ride anything. He loved Jeeps and good quarter horses. And, he didn't mind an attractive woman. he was a good, loyal husband, but Wayne sure did smile a lot when the gals were running around at the bike event. But he was just one of those human beings. And dude, he died. He was trying to go get some equipment out of the flood and got stuck out in some bad water. And man, they tried to rescue him. It went on for a while. I remember I got a call from the local sheriff and that one just kicked my ass. I mean, Wayne was just an amazing human being. So, but it carries on. It carries on. The people who work there, they're dope human beings. They're special people. And that family is as good as it gets. And this Southern hospitality comes out of all of them. And I love them. I love that family. And we're blessed. Carrie, Tanya, and I are blessed to have them as partners. They are partners in the event. We don't lease the property from there. They're actually our partners. And so their DNA is in the middle of this thing too.
Yeah, and it shows. I mean, you're not going to get, when you really drill down and you look at, for the last 25 years, especially during the Discovery Channel era, Carrie Rep, for all intents and purposes, was, I kid around with her all the time and tell her she was a kingmaker. I mean, she could put you on a tour if you were a bike builder, she could put you on the Hard Rock Tour, and people got, your bikes got in front of people, and you got in front of people, and you got opportunities from that. And, you know, and she, so she's no stranger to, the space, right? And then you look at you and Tanya, and you're a lifelong, you've been committed for the last, you know, however many years to custom motorcycles and the culture, and, you know, and it's your outlet for a lot of, for a lot of, people that, that don't know. I mean, you're one of those guys that I looked forward to. I knew I would see you at Daytona. I knew I would see you at Sturgis. But you and I mean, before social media, you and I didn't have the conduit to contact each other if something came up very easily like we do today. And we communicate, you know, pretty regularly, I would say, at least once or twice a month, just through text or whatever. And then as things get closer to events, we know where we're going to run into each other. And that's part, only part of why you go to these things, and you realize that the world that we exist in is such a small, tiny community that, that envelops the whole, you know, continent. It, it's really kind of humbling.
Yeah. And bro, I remember back to those early days, you were a pop, dude. How old were you in Daytona in 08, 07?
30. So like,
yeah, people, you know, that era, it'll never be like that again. It was a crazy time to be in motorcycling, and it was we would go places, and I'd be like, "You guys build motorcycles? Like, stop! You're not like rock stars." But they were, like, they were, for, you know, and they still are in some sense in our community. But, you know, I remember, like, we broke down in Idaho, and some lady recognized Aaron from TV doing something with Billy, and they're like, "Yeah, you can. You could come and stay at our place. My husband's out of town for a few months. You could take some parts off his bike." And, you know, I mean, it was just craziness. And then, yeah, some of the debauchery that went down was pretty wild and pretty unique time. I don't think it'll ever be like that again, but I'm glad I was there, and I'm glad we witnessed it, and I'm glad you were there with me.
You know, I spent some time with Dan Heeman a couple weeks ago in Minneapolis, and we sat down and did a podcast, and he said one of the, you know, I think that Al Ray Rice or three of the, there's some other guys too, CT Newman, but those three guys in particular, Kyle, Daniel, and Brock, kind of have the weight of the custom motorcycle seen on their shoulders more than anybody does right now, because they're pushing the envelope so hard into spaces that people haven't seen, which is tough to say when you look at the last 25 years in motorcycling. But Daniel Heeman said one of the smartest things I've ever heard anybody say, and during the podcast, because he's tough to kind of nail down to, you know, to kind of get his attention. And we were talking, he's like, "I'm not undisciplined." He goes, "I might not start every day at 9 o'clock and end every day at 6. We're loose on that." He goes, "But I know that if I sharpen my axe for 10 hours, I only have to chop for one." And I thought, man, that needs that. I know that's not a new phrase. I know he doesn't own that phrase, but I haven't heard it in so long. And to hear it from somebody who's young and upcoming and really working their ass off to be successful really made me feel good about the fact that the three that I credit with carrying this on as heavily as they do think like that.
Well, I think that's interesting you bring up Daniel. He and I have been chatting a little bit about what he's got going on, and he's building a line right now of carbon fiber and combo parts, like three-piece wheels that are, I think they're part carbon. I don't want to take his fire. You'll see what he's doing, but that kid is doing some amazing stuff. And I love that category, right? Like, I love how things always morph, but the idea of a performance chopper, that's super cool to me, right? It's a hard tail. It's rigid. You're going to feel it. It's going to turn and perform and handle uniquely, but it's built to go. It's built for performance. It's built to be fast and stop well. It's got a racing influence.
Yeah.
That guy's stuff is, and he's got some stuff. He'll be at our event displaying, I think, the early stages of some of this product line. I think he's got carbon fiber rocker box covers for the M8s. I think he's got a points cover, engine cover. I think he's doing wheels. He's got some insane stuff coming. He'll be over by Jeff Holt. So swing by and see Heeman Fab. That crew is producing some crazy new parts. And
they're fun to be around, too.
Yeah, those dudes are legit. No, when I first, before I knew him, I saw that bus. We were at Cycle Showcase in St. Louis, and I'm like, oh my God. Like,
right?
What bus is that? I want one of those. And I'm like, how much to, you know, sell me that bus? He's like, nah, it's not happening.
Yep.
But yeah, you're right. That dude and these young guns, these young cats, rock these other guys. It's cool, man. That's how it carries on and how it evolves. And I love that we've evolved past the big wheel spaceship bagger. I think we can all be pretty happy that we're now into a different realm of motorcycling.
Yes. We still make a fair amount of money doing those, but they just don't have the international star power and the staying power. I don't feel like those are going to be the bikes that, you know, you and I both know when you go down to the Long Beach swap meet, because I know you've been there and you walk around there and you get there early and the sun comes up while you're in line and you walk around and you find an old Arlen Ness primary, or you find, you know, and I don't know if you know this or not, but Arlen Ness used to make billet light switches for the walls in your house. You find something cool. You find something cool like that, and it's, that's your swap meet find, and you find a way to use it somewhere on something. I just don't feel that the big wheel bagger is going to be, it's ever going to carry on like that soul. I mean, I got a text from somebody today, a friend of mine up in Pennsylvania. Hey man, do you have any Arlen Ness billet? Any Arlen Ness billet, not a specific part. It's just that, you know, this stuff is starting to come back around and it's cyclical. And I just don't feel like that the big wheel stuff's going to be there. And I'm not trying to disparage it. I know you're not either. It's just that, you know,
and I poke fun, but I have come to this conclusion, right? And I was talking to Dan about this as well. So the whole thing about bikes is supposed to be about freedom and expression, right? And
right.
It does get a little clicky and judgy sometimes, right? I'm more hardcore. I ride an older bike, or you ride a bagger, whatever. And then, but at the end of the day, the thing is, when you kick your leg over and you fire that thing and get down the road, if it makes you happy, if it makes you feel like you're a bad mofo riding that thing, right, and you love the way that feels, that's all that really matters.
No, it is. You're right.
What a motorcycle really is at the end of the day, that's kind of up to you. And I like that. Like, I, you know, there used to be this elitism about riding only, you know, an American V-twin, you know, air-cooled motorcycle. I'm like, you know, I don't know about y'all, but I rode a lot of metric bikes growing up. You know, most of us couldn't afford or didn't, you know, you were lucky. You had a dad who had V-twins and Harley-Davidsons in your basement, in your shop. But for most of us, the first bike we ever rode was a greasy Honda 70 in someone's barn or someone's garage. And,
sure.
And maybe we had a little XR125, and then maybe we were able to buy a GPZ when we got through, whatever, depending on how old you are, right? There was just a KZ or whatever. But it was never like this elitist thing. It was about riding anything you could ride, really, for most of us. And I love that. I love when I see an old, like, KZ90 or KZ900, and it's all done up and all restoed. I'm like, that's badass, man.
Yep.
That speaks to my youth. So
it's one of the things,
I want to tell people too a little bit about the hill climb, because our hill climb's unique. Yeah, you know, it's not a professional hill. It's not an easy hill, but you can ride American bikes up it. So we race Harleys. We'll have an open Harley class. We have vintage class. We'll run the Booney bikes up it. We have a King of a Dirtbag Challenge that V-Twin Visionary sponsors. But I wanted to let people know we'll have some money in the four classes. So the V-Twin Open there'll be some money there. I believe Vintage, there's some money, ADV, and the Boonies. But Aaron from First Manufacturing, if you don't know Aaron, he makes these ridiculous custom vests.
Yeah, they're very nice.
And you can go on a site. You can build the vest, like, you know, pick the material and the colors and the thread. It's pretty cool. But be warned, you can spend a lot of time designing a vest. But anyway, he's proffered four custom vests for the winners of those classes.
Nice.
So, and those vests aren't cheap. So I just want people to know, like, anybody can come run the hill. You got to be sober, and you got to have reasonable protective footwear, gloves, a helmet. But other than that, it's wide open, and we don't charge to run that hill. Like, it's wide open. Now, if a class that doesn't have money in it, wants to do a, you know, a writer funded purse where they all put in 10 or 20 bucks, we'll support that as well. But really it's more about just coming out and having fun, and you can win a few bucks to cover your gas money, and you can win a badass vest from First. So I'm stoked for them and Boswell and V-Twin. The crazy thing is, dude, so people don't realize this, but we did this. Hold on. Can you turn your volume down, Ben? We did this dirt bag challenge, right? And the idea was we were going to try to put a stock bag, or at least a stock chassis bagger up that hill. And everyone liked the idea, but nobody really would do it. It was too dangerous, or it was, you know, someone would flip a bike and kill themselves, or the bike will never make it to the top of the hill. There were all these reasons it wasn't a good idea. It's bullshit. There was one dude, from the second I mentioned it to him, he's like, yeah, I'm in. What do you need? And that was Jeff Holt.
Yep.
And I love that dude. And so Jeff put up, again this year, $1,000 in V-Twin Visionary vendor product and coverage in his media for the winner of the Dirtbag Challenge. And we had a guy run it last year, Johnny Hawk, on a, I think it was an 05 Road Glide with a knobby on the back.
Yep.
And dude, he ripped it. He made it look easy. And then he rode Danger Dan up on the back. So this year, my hope is we get a handful of baggers to run the hill, and we can do it competitively, and we'll race them and time them. But yeah, come out and win $1,000 in gear and win a vest from First Manufacturing. The hill climb is a pretty special event, and that'll be Friday morning.
And anybody that wants to see, I don't know if you have your subscription to Grease and Gears Television yet, but Grease and Gears Television did a fantastic piece on a documentary piece, or whatever you want to call it, on last year's event. And it has all the coverage from the hill climb on it. From, you can see that Danger Dan and that other gentleman going up the hill on that bagger. And there's lots of event coverage on there. It's a fantastic, I think it's about a 30-minute program that Source Media did on Grease and Gears Television. So listen, everybody needs go ahead.
Well, no, thanks for calling that out. Chris and Heather have been fantastic to work with, and Cycle Source and Grease and Gears. You know, we finally got an outlet on the box. So let's see if we can support that. Those guys, you know, no one works harder than those guys. And I really dig what they're doing. So I want to shout that out.
No, that we definitely appreciate that. They have put in a lot of work on that. That's been, you know, 3 or 4 years in the making to try to make the Grease and Gears network happen. And he's got about 12 or 13 years of Grease and Gears Television that he's, you know, he's working through all of that. And there's some really big things coming with that group too. So everybody needs to go to motorcycleandmusic.com, and motorcycles and music is spelt out. The event is May 16th through the 19th. This year, you can buy tickets online. They've got a list of the bands that are scheduled as of right now. And if you haven't been to this event, this is an event you absolutely need to attend. It's very family friendly, very, very community oriented. And Buck, I love you guys so much. You know that, you and Tanya and Carrie, and I appreciate you reaching out and being on the show with me. And I really look forward to seeing you soon.
Brother, I can't wait. Thanks for the time. We appreciate the platform. And remember, guys, if you know a vet, they're our guests. HD Hero is the promo code. And let's honor these guys, because our freedom ain't free. You're the best, brother.
All right, man. Take care.
Peace. Love you.
Love you, too. Bye.